Hello, everyone, and welcome to the forum where science comes to socialize. I'm here with my two co-hosts, Aubrey and Cleo, and today we're going to be predicting the future.
Which seems pretty appropriate since New Year's is just a few days away. Speaking of New Year's, for those of you who haven't already done so, a pretty safe and easy New Year's resolution this year would be to follow our show on Twitter, at ISGP Forum. And then tweet your comments, questions, and opinions to us with hashtag ISGP Forum.
Definitely like us on Facebook as well.
But in any case, today's topic is predicting future pandemics.
Not the same as predicting the future through a giant Times Square crystal ball at midnight, but arguably much more important.
This paper and debate were featured in the Institute on Science for Global Policy's conference called Emerging and Persistent Infectious Diseases, Focus on the Societal and Economic Context, which took place July 8th through 11th, 2012 at George Mason University.
The paper was written by Dr. Peter Daszak, who is the president of EcoHealth Alliance in New York City. You can find the paper and its debate summary online in the book from this conference, which is in the Publications tab of our website.
Dr. Daszak talked about the emergence of novel and evolved diseases that seem to plague modern society today in his paper titled, How Can We Predict, Prevent, and Pay for the Next Pandemic?
So to kick off our chat today, Dr. Daszak gives a couple of examples of recently emerged diseases, like severe acute respiratory syndrome, or SARS, extremely drug-resistant tuberculosis, and the influenza strains H1N1 and H5N1.
I wouldn't want to meet any of those diseases in a dark alleyway.
Neither would I. The debaters also stated that over the past 60 to 80 years, approximately 10 new infectious disease outbreaks have occurred, including those mentioned by Dr. Daszak.
On top of that, I think the scariest part is the fact that the number of viruses on the planet is unknown. Just think, that means there could be a disease out there that no one even knows about.
Exactly.
Dr. Daszak brought up the fact that over the past few decades, these new pandemics have emerged and spread rapidly due to globalization, deforestation, agricultural intensification, and other forms of fast economic growth.
So, as the world is becoming wealthy, it's becoming sicker?
Well, almost. Dr. Daszak states that the tropics are a hotspot for pathogen emergence, and that these emerging diseases tend to gravitate toward wealthy countries due to distribution of goods and travel. The debaters added to this thought, pointing out that these areas in the tropics that are hotspots tend to be less affluent countries with high amounts of biodiversity. Once the disease has entered an area where there's a population of travelers, it spreads easily to wealthier nations because the inhabitants have the means to travel.
And these emerging diseases don't only affect our mortality and morbidity, but they also affect our economy. For example, from 2002 to 2003, there was a significant decrease in travel to Southeast Asia due to fear of contracting SARS. Another example could be the decline in pork consumption in 2009 due to the swine flu, or H1N1.
So, it's imperative that we stop these new diseases before they spread.
And a majority of the debate was spent on this topic. Dr. Daszak says that all of these disease emergence events over the past six decades have provided ample data to create a model to predict future pandemic.
Maybe before we move forward with this topic, we should explain the difference between a pandemic and an epidemic.
Sure, it's all a matter of scale. An epidemic can be specific to a city, region, or country, while a pandemic is much more widespread, so numerous countries can be infected.
In theory, using the data we have from past pandemics, we can map the regions of the planet that are most likely to be the source of the next big disease.
And in his paper, Dr. Daszak brings up a strategy called smart surveillance.
Smart surveillance? What's that mean?
Well, it's a strategy that uses predictive models to identify where the next zoonoses, or animal-derived diseases, will likely emerge.
However, given that the world is a large place, and that it would take quite a bit of funding to look at every single place that has an animal in contact with humans, he recommends looking specifically at the tropical hotspots we mentioned earlier.
And the debaters certainly agreed. They said that while sampling every species of animal, discovering and identifying all possible viruses and pathogens, and then developing appropriate vaccines was theoretically possible, it would be pricey and time-consuming. Smart surveillance was viewed as a low-cost alternative. They specifically recommended, however, that surveillance be targeted at areas where there's an interface between humans and wildlife areas, like where livestock is raised near a forest.
While there's no way of telling which disease will become the next big thing, the bank of sequences gathered could help develop reagents, diagnostic kits, and vaccines in case there comes a time when there's an outbreak of one of the charted pathogens.
But this is going to require teams of people on site to be documenting and analyzing the new occurrences, right?
Right, and this can be problematic, as most of these areas are in the less affluent areas of the world.
Why would it be so hard to have teams on site in these places?
Well, these countries often have less national disease surveillance infrastructure due to lack of funding. Technological limitations could therefore pose a threat to how thoroughly the data is reported. Even something as simple as a power outage could affect the work needed to be done analyzing these samples.
That makes sense. I always thought the lack of Wi-Fi access would be the death of me.
Dramatic much?
Only slightly. I'm very emotionally attached to the internet.
Speaking of the need to change human behavior...
Hey!
Both Dr. Dashik and the debaters agreed that changing human behavior in these hotspot areas is important to preemptively fight novel diseases.
What better way to stop a pandemic than to make sure it never exists in the first place?
Exactly.
This idea came in two parts. One, stop some of the habits and cultural norms that create disease. And two, stop some of the habits and cultural norms that spread disease.
Practices like capturing and owning wild animals as pets was brought up by the debaters as an example.
And Dr. Dashik brought up a similar example with eating bushmeat, or meat from wild animals in tropical areas.
I'm really glad you gave the definition, because for a moment I thought people were eating actual bushes.
In all seriousness, the eating of wild meat from these areas can cause some of the pandemics that we see today, like HIV or Ebola.
Which is why Dr. Dashik says that providing alternatives to wildlife trade for food purposes, as well as educating the public on the risks associated with such practices, is super important.
The debaters mostly agreed to this, with one exception. While educational efforts have been underway for some time, the debaters felt that education alone has not been helping to curb such behaviors. They believe social scientists need to be involved to help implement changes in the personal behaviors of these communities.
Dr. Dashik wanted to push even further than just education, though. In his paper, he announced that large civil engineering projects, like road building, deforestation, and dam construction, can all increase the probability of people coming into contact with an emerging infectious disease. While it might seem more profitable in the short term to build these structures, the disease can cause widespread economic damage, which outweighs the benefits of the new building.
So, what should these countries do? Just stop building?
Good question. Dr. Dashik doesn't make a recommendation on this, but rather asks that these countries weigh the risks and benefits.
It's not only building and deforestation. He also said the trade in livestock and the development of intensive farms can create the perfect conditions for emerging diseases. Efforts to deal with this risk can reduce profit for the farmers.
Don't eat wild animals, but watch out for livestock, and don't build. I'm beginning to wonder if there's anything that won't increase pandemic risks.
At the end of the day, the debaters admitted that total prevention of pandemics is impossible.
And they also added that while looking at these tropical hotspots is a smart idea, large pandemics could still easily emerge from other regions.
Well, aren't they an optimistic bunch?
But it's certainly true. We need to have confidence that these models will be able to accurately predict the next pandemic. This could be improved by conducting retrospective analysis to show how well past models have predicted pandemic events, and then comparing this to the current surveillance and predictive models to show how well it's doing.
The debaters thought that both reviewing past models and comparing them to the new model would increase policymakers' confidence in our present strategies.
I guess my only question is, sure, we can locate where possible diseases are coming from, But how can we tell if it's going to go full-blown crazy pandemic?
The debaters shared your concern. There is certainly more that needs to be done in this field. However, it was noted that NIAID, or the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, is already looking into this type of research.
Another approach to tackling this problem is something we at the Institute on Science for Global Policy hear quite a bit, and that is a multidisciplinary group of researchers all teaming up to identify emerging diseases.
Dr. Dashik mentions the One Health approach, which, if you're anything like me, I had never heard of before reading this paper.
The One Health approach, as defined by our debaters, is a multi-sectoral approach that brings together people from human, animal, and environmental health fields, like veterinarians, medics, and ecologists.
That definitely goes hand in hand with how these diseases are created and spread.
While this is all well and good, how do we move towards a One Health world?
Both Dr. Dashik and the debaters recommended a partnership with the WHO, the World Organization of Animal Health, OIE, and the FAO.
Dr. Dashik said that the predictive models could be run by these three organizations cooperatively as a tripartite.
They become a super acronym, too. The WHO, OIE, FAO.
They also become more than that. The tripartite could develop programs that directly target surveillance of people, livestock, and wildlife that are at high risk with the emerging disease hotspots. The tripartite could also go one step further and form public-private partnerships, with the private institutions conducting the predictive modeling, while the public organizations conduct the surveillance.
Multidisciplinary public-private partnership. Very ISGP-esque.
But Dr. Dashik recommends going even further. He wants to engage a wider range of intergovernmental agencies, spanning not only the One Health approach, but also in international development, conservation, and trade.
Exactly. There are a lot of groups that we've mentioned thus far that will need to have a say in surveillance. Traders in wildlife and livestock, international travelers, loggers, road builders, dam builders. I mean, this list goes on. And all of them play an integral role in predicting emerging disease.
The goal of all these groups working in tandem would be to deal with the underlying causes of disease in a way that does not undermine the less affluent countries that house most hotspots.
And it would be one giant balancing act of risks and benefits. Do you need to build infrastructure in remote hotspot regions? Why not encourage the growth of a robust supply of safe food to these regions to provide a safer alternative to bushmeat?
The debaters took a very different approach to the idea of private sector involvement. They proposed a tax on industries known to cause novel and emerging diseases, like the meat industry, which for some reason we keep harping on today.
The tax would be proportional to how much of an effect the industry has had in influencing the emergence of past diseases. This money would then be allocated to pandemic prevention, which is a very pricey endeavor.
Is taxing the way to go, or a super partnership? Tell us your thoughts on Twitter with hashtag ISGPForum.
Doesn't this tax become more complicated when taking into account pandemics that might not affect the country paying the tax? Should the industry in one country be paying for the disease in the other?
Well, that's where things get complicated. It was certainly questioned whether or not more wealthy countries should pay taxes to prevent diseases that are not expected to affect them.
While the pandemic might not affect wealthier countries directly, the country would certainly feel the economic impact later on, which is an argument for the tax.
An alternative to taxing industry that the debaters also discussed was that government agencies should directly finance pandemic prevention with congressional oversight.
The debaters very much agreed that in places like the U.S., the cost of prevention could be offset by reallocating current resources from low-impact diseases, like Lyme disease or rabies, to the big bad wolf diseases that make up pandemics.
Huff and puff and make your entire country sick.
Morbid.
Anyway, surveillance needed to examine possible pandemics seems like a logical extension of the Department of Defense's current efforts.
Yeah, the debaters recommended that the DoD build labs in hotspot areas to watch for possible emerging diseases.
But the debaters were still on a roll and proposed yet another idea for funding prevention and prediction of emerging pandemics. This idea was an eco-health credit.
Credit? What does that mean?
Well, the debaters got the idea from carbon credit trading systems, which are used to stop companies from engaging in activities that inherently create carbon. To place it in the context of pandemics, the EcoHealth credit would encourage companies to reduce the risk of pandemics stemming from the activities involved in their work.
However this would be done, there was a general consensus that the industry involvement in pandemic prevention needs to include change in the industry activities that can cause possible outbreaks.
Whether those changes be introduced through incentivizing industry, making mandatory control measures, or funding provisions that would make various practices that prevent disease compulsory.
It was recommended that corporations be incentivized or required to partake in socially responsible pandemic prevention practices, like avoiding hotspot locations, developing a healthcare culture that includes monitoring employees and local communities for new pathogens, and educating employees on how they can prevent the spread of disease.
It just takes one person who forgets to wash their hands.
Seriously.
And these really seem like doable measures. The debaters also stated that there should be policies mandating that corporations conduct health impact assessments, which would determine the potential health impact of the work they're doing.
This is something that Dr. Jashik agreed with in his policy recommendations that he made in his paper.
An incentive to conducting these assessments could be a certification that says the company is eco-healthy.
Which sort of feels like they're getting a gold star for not causing the zombie apocalypse.
Zombies? Really?
If the CDC has a page dedicated to it, I'm allowed to bring it up in intelligent discussion.
Touche, I guess.
Nevertheless, whatever the solution may be, it needs to be tailored to each industry.
Because no matter what the pandemic is, whether it's a new strain of swine flu or Ebola or something unknown,
Like zombies.
it affects all of us.
What do you think? Who is in charge of predicting the next pandemic? Is that even possible? Where does industry fit into all of this? Tweet us at ISGP Forum with hashtag ISGP Forum, and you might just hear your comments on air.
And make sure to like us on Facebook and join the discussion there.
Thank you so much for taking some time to socialize with science today. We'll see you next time on the forum.
The Institute on Science for Global Policy, or ISGP, is a nonprofit organization that convenes international meetings bringing together scientists, policymakers, industry leaders, students, and other stakeholders to discuss pertinent scientific issues facing society. The ISGP has no opinions and does not lobby. Therefore, the preceding podcast reflects the views expressed by the presenters and debaters at our conference. For more information, please visit our website at www.scienceforglobalpolicy.org. Thank you.